Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Star Entertainment Group Full Year Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press the star key, then one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Matt Bekier, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to discuss with you the 2016 results. I'm joined here this morning by Chad Barton, our CFO, who will take you through the financials, while I'll be talking about the sort of the highlights as well as the outlook and the priorities for the future. In summary, it's fair to say that we feel good about last year. If you turn to page number 4 in the slide presentation, we've set out some of the key highlights. Financially, we had a good performance. Total domestic revenue was up 5.8% on last year. That was very broad-based across most product categories. The international business also had a good year, managed to obtain additional growth in the second half to give us a 7% growth on a very big 2015 financial year. As we reflect on the revenue developments in 2016, you may recall that the first half was a very big first half in the domestic business. We were helped in the first half with a number of very good players, as well as a positive win rate in the domestic business, whereas in the international business, we had quite a bit of volume, but we had a terrible win rate. Those sort of trends reverted back to normal in the second half, where the win rate in the domestic business normalized a bit, and the win rate in the international business also returned to much stronger, 1.5%. If you peel back the numbers even more so through the second half, you'll see that May, June was relatively soft. There are a bunch of macro factors that we had to deal with in May, June, and you're all aware of those. Everything from Brexit to the long election campaign. And we saw that really as impacting on consumer confidence, which then translated through to slightly lower visitation during these 2 months. I'm pleased to say that that trend has not continued into this new financial year, so it was a temporary aberration, and we're back in pretty solid growth territory, which you'll see when we talk about the growth outlook. Along with some reasonable cost management, this revenue performance allowed us to grow earnings at a nice trajectory. Actual EBITDA up 7.5%, normalized EBITDA up 15%. That means that the dividend, the board was able to declare a final dividend of 7.5 cents for a total dividend of 13 cents. That's up 18% year on year. It's broadly in line, with our payout ratio of 50% of actual results. These good financials were also matched by good operational improvements that we made during the year. So if you turn to page number 5, we touch on some of those. Operationally, I think what stands out that our guest satisfaction scores continue to increase across the group. We achieved the corporate rebranding to Star last year, and that will now be followed in the coming years with the rebranding of the properties. In terms of our staff engagement has improved quite substantially, and we've been able to fill out important gaps in our talent bench. Our capital investments are continuing to progress, maybe a little bit slower than we had anticipated initially, but well contained in terms of from the cost point of view, so we're coming in well on budget. And I think pleasingly, we're also able to develop with our partners, Chatterfork and Far East, additional development opportunities for the Gold Coast and Sydney, which we hope to pursue in the coming years. All of that sits on top of a very strong balance sheet that gives us confidence that we can fund all of our exciting development plans. If you turn to page number 6, we touch on the main drivers of the 2016 results. And a quick review of the page shows that it's really all about the Star and international VIP business. So turning to the Star on page number 7, the Star reported normalized EBITDA of $382 million. For those of you like me who have been around for a while, you may recall that in 2009, before we started Project Star, earnings at Star, EBITDA was about $200 million. So we're now almost double the earnings that we have back then. And I think it's a really good endorsement of the investment strategy that we started back then, and it gives us confidence that we're on the right trajectory. What was also pleasing about Star was that the growth was really broad-based. Growth in revenues came out of pretty much every line of business. Operating cost up about 7.4%. That reflects the investments that we put in, particularly in the national sales team, where we added additional salespeople in the regions, but also additional marketing corporate staff to get allocated cost-wise back to get back to the properties. But net-net, you know, if you look at the bottom charts, you see very nice long-term growth in terms of revenue that then translates into equivalent growth in EBITDA from year to year. So we're very happy with the performance of Star. Over the page, on page number 8, Queensland is slightly more challenging. I mean, if you revenue is basically flat, down mostly 0.2% versus PCP, that's really on the back of a couple of a swing on VIP business, which is not a big business, but in revenue terms makes a big difference. Queensland then made it up with good cost management that allowed Queensland to report earnings up 7.5%. I mean, the reality in Queensland is, as you know, Brisbane, until Queen's Wharf opens, will not change dramatically. And I have to say, Brisbane is, from every metric that we apply, a very high-performing property for us. And we're pleased with the way it's doing, but it's just, as you know, constrained in terms of additional growth, so that's not going to change dramatically. And then Gold Coast, the performance in the Gold Coast will also not change dramatically until we get the additional private gaming rooms in the new tower that we're developing. So we're looking at the numbers, we're happy with how the property is performing, we're happy with the response that we're seeing to the new capital investments that we're putting in there. And you know, the fact that we've been able to grow earnings in this revenue environment is pleasing. Page number 9 shows you the EGM market share. Across the group, we're pretty steady year on year in terms of the market share. And I think that reflects the fact that we haven't been able to expand this year. Really reflects the fact that the competition is getting more intense. You know, pubs and clubs are upping their game. There's more slot management businesses out there. I think it also says that we really, really need to refocus and push hard on our loyalty, because the loyalty engine is a big driver of this business, and we're looking forward to the relaunch of our loyalty program in this financial year, in the first half of this financial year. I should also say, once we open up the additional gaming facilities in Sydney, the entry-level private gaming room, as well as then following the additional gaming facilities in the new tower in Gold Coast, that will also change the market share slots again. Turning over the page, and page number 10, turning to the VIP business. The VIP business has had a good year. You may recall that 2015, and you see that on the bottom left-hand chart, 2015 was a huge year of growth for us. We were able to consolidate on that growth and add another 7%. On top of that, as I mentioned in the introduction, whereas the win rate was terrible in the first half, it was much better in the second half at 1.5%. For the full year, that gives us a win rate of 1.2%, still below normalized and below what we had in 2015, but obviously not as bad as what the first half had to show. What is pleasing for us is also that, you know, we were disciplined in terms of commissions, we were disciplined in terms of the credit that we were issuing, and that's translating into a very clean book with net receivables up, but none really reflecting that, just the pattern of play towards the end of the year, but no concerns on the longer dated debts. And we've got all the details usually in the appendix on that. So, very happy with the performance of our VIP business. That's a quick overview of how we fared last year. We're going to hand over to Chad now to take you through the financials. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. Just turning to slide 12 now in the pack, and I'll talk through the normalised results first of all on the right-hand side of the page, and I'll give you some more colour around the results. What I would highlight before I get into the detail is obviously you can see there that gross revenue was up 6%. For the year. But what you can really see that's highlighted on this is the leverage that we've been able to achieve in the business again. with net profit after tax on a normalised basis up 23.4%. So it really highlights the leverage we've been getting. And it's pleasing to see that this growth is coming across both domestic and the international gaming. And this is all whilst there's ongoing disruption from the capital works that were particularly relevant in the second half. So domestic gaming revenue grew 6.8%. You know, Sydney had had strong growth at 9.1% on domestic tables and 8.3% on slots, driven by a combination of both increased visitation and increased spend per visitor. Queensland gaming also performed well, with domestic tables up 5.2% and slots up 2.4%. And it's clear that the disruption in Jupiter's has impacted those results in this half. The full-year normalised VIP business gross revenue was up 7.2% and had a record turnover of $49.5 billion. And that turnover was up 7% versus last year. As Matt's already highlighted, IRB had a strong second half. Volumes were actually up 10% on the first half results and a high win rate of 1.5% in the second half. The non-gaming segment was softer across the group, with disruption experienced in the capital works that we've discussed earlier. But you know, particularly you look at the Star. Star had a strong first half that was impacted by disruption in the second half, ending the year with growth of 3.2%. And this growth was driven by a range of new F&B offerings as well as improved hotel occupancy. Queensland continues to be impacted by Jupiter's refurbishment and was down 5.2%, but we're receiving very positive comments from guests on new restaurants and the refurbished hotel rooms. We expect disruption impact to continue during the first half of FY17 before easing in the second half as some of the projects complete. Looking at costs now, gaming taxes, levies and commissions increased by 3.3% due to increased volumes and a 0.5% increase in the average gaming tax rate in Sydney due to progressive gaming tax rates. Commission expenses were flat despite revenue growth in the international VIP business. Operating expenses were up only 4.2% due to the continued strong cost management focus. The cost increases were predominantly driven by increased employee costs associated with the increased volumes, as well as marketing and sales and loyalty investments in the second half that we flagged during the first half reporting season. Normalised EBITDA of $556.2 million was up 14.2%. Depreciation and amortisation consistent with last year. Interest costs of $46 million have reduced by 8.2% due to lower average debt over the year, but also increased capitalisation of interest associated with our capital program. Taxes up on a normalised basis due to the 26% increase in earnings before tax. And we've also, our effective tax rate for the year ended at 30.4%. With normalised NPAT, $241.3 million, up 23.4%. Just looking at the actual results now, the difference between obviously the normalised and the statutory results is due to the actual win rate performance in our international rebate business of 1.2%, being below the theoretical win rate of 1.35%. The impact on gross revenue is a reduction of $73 million, which then flows through to a reduction of $47 million to a statutory NPAT of $194.4 million. Statutory NPAT is up just under 15% for the year, and there is no significant items in FY16. Just turning now to the balance sheet on slide 13. You know, as Matt's highlighted, balance sheet remains strong, gearing at 1x. And this is actually improvement on the first half results, given the stronger second half performance. Net debt finished at $474 million and is up $74 million on last financial year due to the increased capital expenditure. We continue to have strong cash conversion at 98% of EBITDA. Our trade receivables increased by 18% year on year due to increased international VIP business and win rate in the second half. The net trade receivables balance, past due, not impaired balance, was $33 million of the receivables balance. Of this, 95%, it's actually over 95% of the balance, is less than a year old. We also note that we have some investments in associates now on the balance sheet that's coming through as an equity investment. These are associated with Queen's Wharf and our investment in Destination Brisbane Consortium. But we also, with our joint venture partners, acquired a car park in Brisbane during the last financial year. Turning now to funding on slide 14, we have undrawn bank facilities available at year end of $450 million, with an average debt maturity of 3.5 years. We continue to be fully drawn on our long-term USPP facilities, as well as our short-term working capital. We continue to use the short-term working capital facility as it's the most cost-effective funding source of debt that we have. Net finance costs were $46 million, and we expect that to be consistent in FY17. You may note also we've added some further disclosure on our interest costs at the bottom right-hand side of the page that just highlights the $17 million of interest rate swap expense that runs through our interest cost line. Turning now to CapEx on slide 15, as Matt's already highlighted earlier, the group's had good progress on our capital projects across all our properties. The CapEx for the year was $306 million, which was in line with our guidance. $224 million of this relates to growth projects delivered or underway at the Gold Coast and in Sydney. For FY17, we expect capital expenditure to be in the range of $375 to $425 million, plus an additional $120 million for Queen's Wharf equity contributions in 17. Depreciation and amortisation was flat on prior year, but following completion of projects that we'll discuss a bit further, next year's depreciation is expected to be in the range of $180 to $185 million. Now turning to slide 16, where we detail a number of the projects that we have underway. We've delivered a number of projects in the year, including new junket gaming salons at the Darling Hotel in Sydney, as well as Oasis Gaming expansion in Sydney and the buffet refurbishment. At the Gold Coast, we've delivered a new garden kitchen and bar restaurant and level 21 VIP gaming salons. There are a number of projects that are underway, and in Sydney they include the main gaming floor expansion and expect this year completion of the Astral Tower and residence, as well as we are doing a lobby refurbishment. On the Gold Coast, the VIP Suite Hotel continues well and is on track, and the refurbishment projects of main gaming floor, hotel rooms, F&B in the Western Quarter and lobby and arrival experience will continue over this financial year. So to conclude on slide 17 from a financial perspective, the group has delivered another strong set of financial results this year with a further 15% growth in NPAT, to achieve 46.5% compound annual growth rate over the last 4 years. This growth is pleasing, has been broad-based and underpins good growth across both our domestic gaming business and our continued growth in the international rebate business. Our financial position is strong, our balance sheet is strong to be able to allow us to focus and execute on our strategic growth plans. I'll hand back to Matt.
Great, thank you, Chad. I'm on page number 19, where we talk about priorities and the trading update. Our priorities for 2017 are really a scroll forward of the strategy that we've been pursuing for a little while. First of all, we must and we can continue to improve earnings across the group by continuing to push efficiency and our operations. Second, obviously there's a big capital program underway that we are keen to execute against. Third, we want to advance the planning approvals that will allow us in the future to to pursue these additional highly accretive joint venture development plans in the Gold Coast and in Sydney. And lastly, it's not just about building things, it's also about for us to round out the experience that the customer has in our properties. So we want to continue to work on our brand, on our loyalty proposition, our customer service and the food and beverage offering to really differentiate our properties from others in the market. Chad's referenced the disruption that we'll be facing. It's really, you know, probably at the peak right now. In Sydney, you should assume that it will start to subside a little bit as we go through the first half. In the Gold Coast, it will subside in the second half. In this year, we're also, you know, assuming additional continued investment into our cost base. So I'm not sort of signaling a cost blowout. All I'm signaling is that, you know, the percentage of our expenses as a percentage of revenue will continue to be the same as in prior periods. But as revenue expands, those expenses are getting up, going up, and operating leverage will return in future years. As to the trading for 2017, I reference that we're up about 4.1% year on year. That probably feels for us a bit better than it looks. And I mentioned earlier on, the first couple of months last year were very strong in BV, both in terms of domestic win rate as well as some of the play that we observed. So we're pleased by the fact that we can continue to grow on that very strong basis. The international VIP business is performing well to our expectations, both in terms of win rate as well as in terms of volume. Obviously, there's a lot of property development happening, so I just thought I might take the opportunity to just quickly click through the three properties and give you a sense of the sequence of events. Page 20 sets out the scope for each one of these properties that we're trying to develop in the next 5 years. Page 21 then talks about what we're trying to do in Sydney. The little table on the upper right-hand side talks of the capex that you should anticipate. So we've previously talked about $500 million. That's really the scope for the refurbishment of the existing hotel, the Sovereign Room, and some F&B. On top of that, we're hoping to get planning approval to do an additional tower and additional food and beverage. So if you get all of this done, we'll get to 1,000 hotel rooms and 50 food and beverage offerings at Star. And our share of that capital will be about $667 million prior to any sales and proceeds from apartments on the new hotel tower. The second part, all the new hotel tower and the F&B, that's all subject to getting development approvals, which we'll be seeking to engage with government in this financial year. Over the page on the Gold Coast, again, if I can turn you to the table on the upper right-hand side, we previously talked about the $345 million. So that's really the refurbishment of the existing hotel, the expansion and refurbishment of the existing F&B, the refresh of the main gaming floor, refresh of the lobby, and the new six-star hotel that we're building in the front. That's all progressing to plan. It will be completed by early calendar 2018 before the Commonwealth Games. On top of that, we are in planning and hope to go to council and the regulators in the near future for an additional tower, a joint venture tower, you know, which will be apartments as well as a hotel. If we are successful in getting this planning approval and if our pre-sales for the apartments are positive, then we'll go ahead with the tower, and then we'll also put in $100 million worth of additional facilities to really integrate this tower into the site and round it out with additional attraction drivers and food and beverage going forward. That's also, you know, that will all sort of unfold over the next 9 months as we're going through planning and then the pre-sales. And finally, on Queen's Wharf, you know, we are up to our eyeballs in planning and trying to get the requisite approval steps done with government. When we bid Queen's Wharf, you should think of planning being at an accuracy of 15 to 20%. We're now at about 60% accuracy, and we're getting a much better feel for the construction challenges and the precise allocation of our capital spend. We're still looking at about $2 billion investments to be made. You should assume that we expect to get all the requisite approvals this financial year. in the second half of this financial year, then get our hands onto the site and commence the demolition of the existing facilities that are on those on that side. So, in summary, we have very exciting times ahead of us. The management team is very excited about the continuing opportunities to expand earnings and drive operational improvements. And we're obviously also excited about the opportunity to simultaneously build out the platform for longer-term growth. And that's really the challenge for this year. That concludes our presentation. Operator, if I can ask you now to take questions from the people on the call. Thank you.
Certainly. The first question today comes from Matt Ryan of UBS. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. Can I just confirm something that you just said earlier on costs, that you thought costs or operating costs as a percentage of revenue moving forward this year would be similar to the last couple of years?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then just a quick one on disruption, looking a bit further out than FY17, there's obviously a lot of other initiatives and developments that you're working on into 18. I guess the question is, are you expecting for this disruption to go away in the second half of 17, but then potentially come back at some stage? And if that's the case, can you maybe outline when that might be or the sort of major projects that might impact that?
Yeah. Look, on disruption, Brisbane, you know, really won't have any real disruption to the operations because the site is adjacent, and so we don't anticipate any real disruption. Gold Coast, once we've gone through the, particularly the lobby that we're doing now, there's going to be no meaningful disruption. You know, the property might look a bit ugly because of all the cranes and all the just all the buildings outside, but there's no real disruption to operations. So we don't really anticipate anything material post this, the end of this calendar year in the Gold Coast. And then in Sydney, the main floor will be expanded and in full flight from the second half of this financial year on. But the arrival experience will continue to be disrupted for another 12 to 15 months after that because we're redoing the whole Porker share and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be, so from a pure gaming point of view, this shouldn't be too bad in second half 2017 and 18. And then the Southern Room will really start to kick in 2019.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Adam Alexander of Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Matt. Morning, Chad. Just on VIP, in the Star, delivered another record half, and you're really growing that Sydney market well. Can you just sort of run through with it, new junkets you're bringing in, or it's more spend from your existing players? And I know it sets up, you know, another big comp for next year, but given you've got a full year of the Darling Suites, you're still confident in being able to comp that?
Yeah, look, if you look at the junket business for us, in the first half, I think it was 84% of total revenue. For the full year, it's moderated to 80%. The junket business will continue to be the backbone of this business for us. And when we look at the junkets, you know, for the last 4 years, there's obviously been consolidation amongst the junkets, but the top four or five are the top four or five junkets. And for us, there's no really new names as such to the Australian market, it's just that the relative weighting seems to change a little bit year on year. We're trying to make sure that we get into relationships with these junkets that give us more predictability, but, you know, that may be a little bit wishful thinking. You know, with those junkets, the variability is also impacted by our view of their credit exposure. So that you will always see some people go up and down until they've cleared the backlog. Our VIP strategy is to continue to grow the junket business as the backbone, but we feel we need to diversify the sources of revenue. And so that's where we referenced some of the investments earlier on. You know, the premium mass team, we started to build that up in the fourth quarter of last year. It's starting, you know, the first bunch of salespeople are starting to be productive now. We continue to expand this sales team in the first half of this year. And then the direct business in Southeast Asia, that's now pretty much a full complement. There's one or two more roles to come, but that's pretty much a full complement. In the fullness of time, we really want to just diversify, you know, and add additional sources of revenue to the junket business to take away some of that volatility. In terms of capacity, Adam, there's no real problem. We have enough capacity now in Sydney.
Yeah, so in the first half, you'll have what the Darling Suites open, which you didn't have in the PCP. So we should sort of, how have they been performing since they opened? It looks like from the numbers pretty good.
We're pretty happy with it. Look, capacity is not the issue. Right? The challenge here is not building our capacity. The challenge is loading it up with creditworthy customers.
Yep. And then can I just switch to this trading on the main gaming floor? Is sort of you called out May and June looks to have been pretty soft. Can you just maybe split out what you thought was just disruption versus a broader consumer slowdown? And then in terms of the trading update, does look like it's come back. Is that more Sydney, Brisbane, or Sydney, Queensland, or both?
When we look at May, June, visitation was down in all our properties. So that sort of says to us, you know, it wasn't so much disruption as it was a real sort of, you know, softening in consumer confidence. And now visitation is strengthening again in each one of the properties. It's fair to say that New South Wales stands out particularly strongly. New South Wales is doing well.
Okay, great, thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Wilson of Deutsche Bank. Go ahead, please.
Thanks very much, Matt. Just looking at the performance year to date, you spoke about revenues being up 4%. Can you just give a breakdown there between gaming and non-gaming?
Well, gaming is high, non-gaming is lower. So, sorry, I don't want to be flippant, but gaming is, you know, if you look at the results for the full year, that gives you a pretty good sense of the difference between those lines of business. And non-gaming for us on a cash basis, you know, is impacted right now. The hotels, we still have about 30% of our capacity out as we're hammering through the existing hotel rooms. That's impacting. And, you know, the cash business is also impacted by continuing relatively high levels of comp, self-comp that people are using from the loyalty program. So that, therefore, you know, on a cash basis, you know, there's almost no growth. You should assume there's almost no growth. We're not going backwards at a huge clip, but there's almost no growth. So the real growth is all in gaming.
Exactly. So it looks as though the gaming numbers are actually quite pleasing and on a tough comp as well.
The gaming numbers are... Look, I'm looking at my colleagues here who are glaring at me. How do I qualify it? Last year was the first half was really good, and last year, particularly the first quarter, was really good. This year, you know, I'm pleased that we have real growth on those really good numbers in our gaming business. I think it speaks to the strength of the market, and it speaks to the, you know, ability for us to attract more customers into the business, you know, despite the disruption.
Right. And then in the second half, it looks as though Queensland did slow quite appreciably, but you did well on the cost side. Can you just elaborate on, you know, the key drivers there and what you were able to achieve?
Well, you know, Queensland is, the real challenge we have in Queensland is the lack of private gaming rooms. And if you look at our growth over the last little while, most of the growth has come out of private gaming, particularly in Sydney. The top tiers of our customer base and the higher end of our customers have done particularly well. And as you know, we are trying to expand that now by creating an entry-level private gaming room on the main floor, which we look to commission in the first half. So it's the ability to tier customers that drives real growth. You know, the main floor is the engine room, brings people in, and then we need to tier customers up. We can do that in Sydney. We can't do that as effectively in Queensland because the private gaming rooms are old and limited in, particularly in Brisbane, limited in terms of the capacity.
And on the cost side?
On the cost side, if there's no additional business coming in, you know, we don't put additional resources up. So, and there's no point being too crazy about marketing if you can't physically provide access to customers. So we're just being realistic about what can be achieved in those markets.
Right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sasha Crean of CLSA. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, guys. Just a couple of clarification questions first. So, Matt, can you just confirm, did you say VIP was performing well in FY17 so far?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then in terms of the costs, I mean, at the first half you were talking about some one-off costs related to the rebranding and loyalty program. Have they been pushed into FY17?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then final question, just in terms of your comments on premium mass, I mean, any of the arrangements you're putting in place there, are you tapping into any of your JV partners, customer bases, or is there anything sort of on the cards with the China travel service you can talk about that has been in the press, I think?
Not yet. Nothing. So we haven't got any formal arrangements in place. What we're doing so far is we are building up our own standalone sales force. That sales force is really focused largely on Southeast Asian markets, not on China. And you know, what you are referencing is a pretty substantial medium-term opportunity for us to tap more broadly into the high-end Chinese traveler who also may want to game. But we haven't done that yet. You know, one of the things we are looking at is what hotel brands we are using in some of the locations and so on, and who do we get to operate these hotels. But that has yet to be finalised.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Rowan Sundram of Citi. Go ahead, please.
Morning, guys. I was just keen to understand the drivers of the second half margin performance at Sydney and Queensland. So Sydney looked a little bit below expectations and Queensland above. I understand that mix could be a part of it and VIP commissions, but can I just get a bit more colour around that, please?
Look, you're right in terms of the second half. You know this as well as me, but you know what drives margin is really the relative growth of electronic gaming in business. And Queensland is more heavily skewed and geared towards electronic gaming. We had good revenue performance in Sydney. A lot of that was VIP business. There's also a lot of tables business. And if you look at the table numbers in Sydney, those numbers have actually been pretty solid in the second half. And you know, tables and VIP are lower margin than slots.
Okay, thanks. And I guess just to follow up, 6 months ago you flagged that you would be spending about close to $10 million in incremental marketing costs in the second half. Did you come close to that, and should we be thinking about any incremental spend on top of that going forward, just tying into some of your previous comments?
You know, so some of that expense will be pushed into this financial year.
Which is what you're saying earlier. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, the nature of that is there's one-off costs around rebranding. So you have to take the crane up to take the Jupiter sign down and stuff like that. And then the sort of launch activities, you know, which won't be of the scale that of investment that was put through when we relaunched Star in 2011 or 12, but there will be some expense. The more material expense is just going to be related to the operation of the loyalty program when it launches, because we're putting pretty substantial additional benefits to the customer.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sam Dobson of Macquarie. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. Just a couple of questions. I mean, just following up on the last question, so marketing costs. And related to sort of Chinese inbound growth, you previously talked to that as being a significant growth driver for Star, given that airline capacity growth for the first half 17 is looking like 15%. What are sort of the activities that are going on there, and what are you doing to sort of drive that that increase in Chinese inbound visitors?
You know, look, the development of that strategy is, you know, high on our list of priorities, and we've started to sort of build a little team to actively pursue the opportunity. If I can put some numbers around it to give you a sense, you know, we think that right now only about 3% of our revenue comes from tourists. Right? We also know that a surprisingly large percentage of particularly Chinese tourists find their way into our properties, between, depending on the property, 25%. So the attraction is there, and the reason why we don't get more is because we can't get these people to stay on property. That's why one of the main drivers for us to build out the hotel and room capacity in our properties. And if you think about it, the typical trip of a high-end customer right now is $5,000 to $8,000. We get 150 of that. Why? Because we're just a side trip. And for us to get a more substantial part of that wallet has to involve, you know, getting further up in the decision-making chain. So working with the relevant tour operators in China to be more visible. But then most importantly, by having the hotel capacity to get people to stay.
Just adding to that, Sam, you know, we're running at mid-90% hotel occupancy across last financial year. We have significant capacity that's been offline, so we're running very high occupancy levels, capacity that's been offline. And so as the refurbished rooms come on board, but importantly as well, the additional towers come on board, that'll add further capacity to the business.
Okay, clear. Just in a clarification on Star Sydney development, you mentioned 1,000 hotel rooms and residences. Is that 1,000 keys there? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And are you willing to give a indication of what the split would be between hotel rooms and apartments?
Two-thirds hotel rooms.
Two-thirds. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. The 1,000 is in aggregate, right? We currently Thank you.
Yeah, perfect. And just a final one, just on funding. So, you know, the balance sheet, you know, remains very strong. Net debt to EBITDA on an actual basis, 1x. So it looks like you've got, you know, quite a bit of flexibility there. You've stretched that to 2.6x. You know, it's been as high as 2.6x previously. Just wondering if you can give us a sense of how much headroom you think you've got to fund the upcoming growth pipeline. So just, you know, how much would you be willing to stretch that? Obviously, the business, you know, is quite different now to what it was in FY12, so a much stronger business. So just interested in your thoughts of what that profile could look like.
Yeah, so certainly, you know, as you point out, Sam, the balance sheet's, you know, in a very strong position, you know, gearing it at 1x. You know, we do have a big investment pipeline that we have certainly over the next few years and into Queen's Wharf opening. You know, the essence of how we think about it is that, you know, we don't really want to be sitting anywhere kind of over 2 to 2.25x on gearing. Is our view. Whilst we don't have a public rating, we do have a private rating. We're very keen to maintain our rating that exists there at this point in time. So, you know, the capacity is there to do it. There's, you know, we don't see any need at this point in time to raise any equity for our development pipeline that we have either.
Okay.
My only addition to that is, bear in mind the first half. You know, yes, our business is a lot more robust, but every now and then you get a freakish win rate. And so we need, you know, we take a conservative view of the headroom that we would like to maintain to be able to withstand those events. So when Chad models his balance sheet, he takes a 99% confidence interval over the possible outcomes from the BRP business. As the BRP business expands, we just need to maintain that headroom to be absolutely comfortable that we can, you know, continue to invest and won't have to put stuff on the back burner just because you know, you've had about 6 months on the win rate.
Yeah, so the impact on the first half win rate, which was a 0.88 win rate we had in the first half, added 0.3 times to the gearing ratio.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ben Levin of Credit Suisse. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. It's Barry Gandler. Just a question on the new Gold Coast project. Matt, can you sort of highlight entirely what's going to be open, I guess, as of July 2018, when that project is sort of slated to go ahead? And also, with regards to VIP at that project, what's the level of pent-up demand to fill that new six-star tower and the capacity there? And how should we think about cannibalization at Sydney?
Yeah. Look, so the timeline broadly for the developments on the six-star tower, we hope to have that ready before the Commonwealth Games, which are in April 2018. So have to have that done by, you know, hope to have it done by January and then bump in and get ready for that. So with that, we get material new gaming rooms back. If you go back in the history of the Gold Coast, you'll see that back in the early 2000s, we had a very substantial VIP business. And that business then just dried out because the rooms started to get tired and the gaming rooms just weren't up to international standard anymore. So we think there is very substantial, you know, evidence that there is pent-up demand. And the way we think about it is it's the second trip. And we see that quite a bit now with some of our junkets who come to Sydney, you know, play, and then they want to go to the coast to play golf and do something else. And yes, they want to continue to play. And that second leg of the trip is a very attractive offer in the Gold Coast. And so we're very keen to see that happening as quickly as possible. In terms of the additional tower that is under planning, timeline for that is we're going to council very, very shortly. Approvals will then be required from the regulator. We hope to get that in the first half of this financial year. All going well then, we will be in pre-sales for that tower in Q3 or Q4 of this financial year. If you get the pre-sales up to the appropriate level, we could then start work late in calendar 2017 to get the tower developed by 2020.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sasha Crean of CLSA. Go ahead, please.
Sorry, Matt, just two quick follow-up questions. First of all, in relation to the additional development on the Gold Coast, can you just clarify in terms of the CapEx, has your share of that additional CapEx gone up relative to the first half presentation? I think it says gross CapEx share of 230 versus net CapEx share of 100 at the first half.
It's the same. It's probably, we may not have been as clear as we should have been last time round. The only thing is that's different is we're now putting some more robust estimates around the additional facilities that we would want to develop. So in the new tower we have one third, but all the additional facilities, which are essentially expansion of the main gaming floor into that tower, as well as some additional food and beverage, that stays with us. So we have 100% of that.
Okay, thanks. And then the second question, just in terms of those Gold Coast additional developments, I mean, are any of these contingent on ASF getting their casino off the ground on the Gold Coast, and do you think they'll get it off the ground?
First of all, this tower here, we feel pretty comfortable that this tower makes a lot of sense, pretty much under any circumstance. We're committed to it, and we're excited about it. The wider master plan, we have to look at that in the context of the competitive environment, right? So if something massive gets dropped on us, we need to be very mindful of what that looks like before we just commit to the execution of the master plan. In terms of the probability that ASF gets up, look, I'm really, you know, I've got my personal view on that, but I have no inside information over the prospect. I just note that this thing has been around for 3 years.
Yep. Okay, thanks. That helps.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from David Rosenblum of Henderson Global Investors. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks. If I heard you correctly, I mean, there was a lot of questions about increased marketing costs going into this year and rebranding. I think you said the big portion of it was in the loyalty program. So if I did hear you correctly, how do we think about the top line impact of that, you know, given your experience you had in Sydney and those kinds of things?
Well, what happened 3 years ago when we relaunched the loyalty program last time around, we combined that with a pretty drastic culling of access rights to customers. And that then really hurt the private gaming rooms, which, as I previously said, has been the engine room of our growth. So when we relaunch the loyalty program here, there will be no culling of access rights. We have now the disciplines correct, so the right people are in the right slots. What is changing with the loyalty program will be what customers can do with it. And the reason why it's a big deal is, you know, we ultimately reinvest roughly 10% of revenue back into the customer. And that is all governed through loyalty. And the way we allocate and who gets what and how much we spend at which tier, that's all governed through the rules of the loyalty program. And we have, you know, decided to probably increase the investment into the customer through the loyalty program. In aggregate, though, the total cost will not go up because we expect that revenue will make up for this additional investment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beckier. There are no further questions at this time. I'll hand back to you for closing remarks.
Well, great, Jane. Thank you. Thanks, everybody who's joined us on the call tonight, this morning. And I look forward to talking to you again over the next few days when we do the individual meetings. Thank you very much.